correction or approval from our last meeting, March 15th, 2022. Good. Good. Joe, you have any
questions?
Good. All right, go ahead and approve what you present. We're going to go ahead and amend the agenda. We're going to go ahead and we move item 11 to our first item. So it's PW 2022-41, the public works facility interim space needs.
Yeah, so we've got a proposal in the packet from Kluber. Chris Hansen of Kluber is here to talk through the proposal and answer any questions you have. But this basically gets to you know, what some of the comments were at the end of the last space needs presentation, that maybe some of the dollar amounts and spaces were a little bit too much for what we thought we needed or could afford. And so there's a component of this study that will look to kind of dive into some of those details to see if we want to keep them in an ultimate facility plan or whether we want to take them out to save money. And then there's also some other deliverables in there related to layouts, and then a site-specific analysis whenever we choose to acquire a property. So some of that is time-sensitive in that once we identify a property, we have to enter offers before somebody else does and buys it out from under our feet. And then, you know, usually you've got a nice, you know, condensed due diligence period because we're probably looking at a land purchase as opposed to a facility purchase, although anything is possible. So with that being said, Chris, I didn't know if you wanted to give a couple minute elevator speech on what we've got in here and see if you guys have any questions.
Yeah, I think the key here for this next portion of the work is to really hone in on the public works side of, there were three components to the project originally. Public works, parks and rec, as well as
Kendall Area Transit.
Yep. Kendall Area Transit, and since we've all met last year, I don't know that CAT is entirely off the table, but I think the idea here is moving this forward, we have been asked to really focus on the public works needs for this next step, work with Eric and his team to really hone this down into the spaces that are needed for his operation. See what that looks like from a financial perspective as well as a space size perspective. Some of the original spaces we had actually designed for multiple parties to use, like CAT as an example. In this case, if we're looking at a public works facility, we already know that space as an example would be reduced in size to accommodate only their needs. And I think going through this analysis, we'll be able to just fine-tune the information that we had previously, and I think I mentioned that at the original board meeting. I think there's some areas that we can look at and hit pretty hard with some further in-depth conversation. Still have the component, but maybe we look at it in a different light to be able to reduce square footage and ultimately cost. We also do, as Bart mentioned, want to take a look at some site to put this building on and do a layout for it. I think what's important is once we fine-tune that square footage is revisit how much acreage do we need one more time, do we have utilities to the site or not, do we have stormwater management in place or not, what does that mean to the budget, do we have to extend utilities to the site. All of those things are going to be factors that we want to make sure we look at pretty well as it relates to a revised budget. So that's really what this step is. We don't imagine that this step's going to take more than about 45 to 60 days. Eric's team's always been very accommodating to get us in for meetings, so I would envision that will continue. And then what we'd like to do is try and identify a parcel size, anyhow, about 30 days from once we start this back up, to see if we can look and identify any additional parcels. You're probably all aware we've looked at probably 8 or 9 parcels right now. And the preferred one is no longer available. So we really need to hone back in on what are those other locations, what makes the most sense for response time, accessibility, so on and so forth. So that's part of this plan as well. So that's pretty much the quick overview of what we're going to take a look at doing here. Does anyone have any questions?
Time frame was going to be my only one, but you answered it.
Well, we can take as long as you want. You know, when we get to the point of looking for property, we really need to make sure we do our due diligence in that regard. Setting the ideal space size and of acreage potential, I think, is important. But there's so many other factors when choosing the property, such as, is it properly zoned or do we have to do a rezoning? Are we near an adjacent neighborhood or are we not? Are we in an industrial area or are we not? Commercial corridor or not? All of those things will affect the decisions that we're going to make in regards to the property. And there's very few properties within the city that I'm aware of that actually meet and are zoned properly for this facility. So it's already limited, and it's likely we're going to have to do some sort of conditional use no matter what parcel we take a look at. So anyhow, all that will be a part of the process, and it may take a little bit more time than if we need to.
Yeah, if nobody has any questions, we would recommend approval at the next city council meeting. That will allow us to start on some of the non-land components of the study. So that when we identify land, we're ready to go there too.
Awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. All right.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. Appreciate Thank you all. Take care. Have a good night. You too.
Thanks. All right. So our favorite topic to not address until next year, hopefully, right? New business item number one. PW 2021-31, the snow operation reports.
Well, we were talking about snow after 95 degrees, but here we are. Actually, very typical year is what we had last year. Not really any big highlights. We used about 1,500 per salt, which is a little below average. Yeah. But you know, we didn't go out as many times, and when we did, we had to throw a little more salt because of the ice conditions. One thing I've noticed is that you know, our trucks didn't get here until later in the year, and we're still waiting on the third truck. So hopefully, you know, we will have a much more robust fleet for the entire year next year, which should help us in time. Other than that, there's really only two have any questions. Luckily, thankfully, not that would have pretty poorly to get. I have none.
I'm good.
Just one thing. So when do you start looking to buy salt for next year?
Already, thank you, Ken. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
I already put in our bid.
Okay.
1,800 tons is what we bid for, and I estimated at $95 a ton. I was very conservative, and that's down here in the agenda. You'll see there's a resolution, an MFT resolution for that.
Okay.
We have to do that in April, and we usually get the salt bids back in September. This past year was October.
And then the one year before it was cheaper, and then this year it was more, right?
Correct. They didn't get the bids they thought they would, so they did not honor the 2-year rollover.
Okay.
So everybody had to take a new bid, and the same thing this year. They did not give us an option for a rollover contract, so it has to be all new bids.
Okay.
So I'm bracing for the worst.
Item number two, PW 2022-32, water department reports from March through April of 2022.
Just a couple quick water reports so we stay on top of this a little better than we did last year when we did the system road. Again, nothing out of the ordinary here. Normal water use, I don't believe there was any breaks on either one of these, no. So that's a very good thing, but if you notice from March to April, you'll see it start sneaking up as the temperature sneak up. And we noticed a gigantic jump this past week with only in the 90s. So, but it is what it is. These are just something we have to turn into the IUPA every month and we have to keep pushing forward to the city council.
Questions? Objections? All right, let's go ahead and move forward. Put on the consent agenda.
Yes.
Unless there are any objections.
Good.
Excellent. On to new business item number three, POV 2022-33, the capital project update.
All right, so there is the typical update in the packet. This was actually prepared for the April meeting, so we have a couple verbal updates that I can pass along. So no road reconstruction. Deconstruction has actually been out. They have placed the final surface course on the roadway. The striping was installed yesterday. Today, we're out landscaping and installing shoulder stuff. So the fluid is initiated a punch list work. They have completed the crack sealing work that we had requested that they do, and also looking into the rejuvenator works, which we had asked also. So they had submitted a couple items to us for review. We're taking a time to take a look at those, make sure we're okay with the product, and then we'll be okaying it moving forward. So there's progress being made in Fox Hill. A couple other things to note is this year's road program started with concrete removals today in the Sunflower Estates subdivision, and that work will just continue for the next couple of months. So right, concrete work to do, we'll come in and do the elevator servicing, plus there's many other components involved this year's road program, including some striping and rejuvenating work as well. So quite a bit of work to be done. East Main Street project, that water main construction project, has been initiated, started the first week of May. Contractors making very good progress, and has installed, I would say 50%, probably closer to 75% of the water main thus far. So, again, still a lot of things to be done, but a good progress.
Is it pressure test in the morning?
And then the other item is well number four. After we issued this memo, and my staff had a meeting with Lane Western. They're running a couple weeks behind schedule, what was noted, so they will be in the last week of May, is what they're telling us, to reinstall the pump and motor within the filler. So those were some of the main highlights. Definitely open to addressing any questions they might have on the rest of it.
Only question I had was on the Fox Hill, not so much the improvements and stuff that you addressed, but I know we had talked about it was like a remittance or something along those lines, 40,000 estimate. Are we still asking for that, pursuing that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, that has not changed. The contractor has not requested a conversation with the city staff, so that could change. But at this point, it seems like they're agreed to do the work,
Have we received anything else from Fox Hill residents at all?
Nope.
No. Okay. Excellent. Yeah, that's the only good question I had. Thanks, Brad. New business item number four, PW 2022-34, bond to LLC reduction summary, March 31st, 2022.
Yes, this is the summary for the first quarter, so it was a decent amount of activity in the first part of 2022. The annual report is listed in the packet, and certainly able to answer any questions that you may have on.
Timber Ridge, formerly Kendallwood Estates, street name change.
All right, so there's a new developer, as we know, and has taken over Kendallwood, and accordingly, they'd like to change the street names out there, so there's a process that we need to go through that's required City Council approval, and the names are listed there. That has been reviewed and checked with Kendall County GIS, and everything is checked out. We did have several back and forths because things were not on the up, but they are now, and the recommendations for a little bit.
That makes sense, but this has been a discussion point, so we'll just keep that on the calendar to end up.
Yep.
New business item number 6, PW 2022-36, presentation on the lead water service lines.
Yes, and I want to introduce Kristen from my office. So she is our lead service line expert. There's a lot of information, you've probably heard some topics, some news, and definitely worthwhile bringing some things to the community's attention. And we can say that. A lot of months or so ago, and they certainly recommend that they bring it Chris then will lead us through the little PowerPoint here, and certainly at any time during the presentation, if you have questions, just jump in and we have for us.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
Over the total timeline for responsibility of the municipality to coordinate, not necessarily to fund. It will require a policy decision if you choose to coordinate that funding with the homeowners or the towns the city chooses. It's really not mandated by the act itself. And the homeowners might refuse to allow a full flood service line replacement, and that is the case. The act does address a waiver that needs to be signed and sent to the Illinois Department of Public Health. So there are a number of steps that go into that. So here's some details on the flood service line material inventory. So in the key dates are really next year, April, is that first complete material inventory where all of the materials will need to be accounted for in the digestion system for every water service line, whether or not. And then the complete and final material inventory will be due in April 2024, and that will help us develop the flood service line replacement plan afterwards. And this just outlines a number of detailed requirements for the inventory. So the act does recommend a number of steps for creating the material inventory. So the first step would be historical analysis, and Eric and John have already completed this step by analyzing the city as a whole and identifying some of the older areas in town where flood is likely to be encountered. So we've already been able to rule out a lot of the areas that are covered and just focus on some of the areas that are unknown to inventory those. The second step would be supplemental historical analysis. So for example, looking for building permits to see if the water service line was identified at any point in time. Step three would be individual inspections, and this is what we're getting into with some other communities, you know, getting inside the home or reaching out to homeowners themselves and so having them visually inspect their service lines and report back to us, maybe with a photo or a survey, and I think we'll talk about that in detail later in the presentation. And then the fourth step is really just ongoing data collection, so informing all staff who might be going into these homes or observing excavations and being able to know the service line materials that and the available opportunity. So this is the flood service line replacement plan that will be due in 2024. So as we can see, the material inventory combined with that goal rate that we've established will feed into the flood service line replacement plan and help the city develop a comprehensive plan for how it's going to remove all of the flood. And here are a number of details required for the flood service line replacement. Like I said, it's going to be April 2024. Updated plans will be annually after that. And how the city is planning to progress to 100% non-lead. So one of the big funding options that a number of communities choose to pursue is the IEPA State Revolving Fund. This could be low interest or principal forgiveness loans. We do expect that significant portion of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act money will be funneled through the SRF funding. So the process is the community submits a project plan that takes about a year to get approved by the IEPA, and then it positions the city for potential funding for the following 5 years. Some other potential future funding sources, like I said, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, likely to go through the SRF funding. The Illinois Flood Service Line Replacement Fund is what was mentioned in the act. Like I said, not a whole lot of detail on that yet, and that will be available to. And then also municipal policies and ordinances, so how the community decides to share those costs with the homeowners. So my big recommendation to communities is to start now, and Eric and his team already have a really good jump on this by identifying and ruling out a lot of the service lines in the community, but you know, looking forward and seeing how we can incorporate a number of different staff members to gather as much information as possible will really ease our way into full compliance. And then I think I mentioned the survey that we've been developing. So for inventory, we've developed a GIS-based survey where we send either a postcard or a letter out to residents and walks them through identifying their service lines in their homes. So it has pictures that can compare copper, lead, calcium, anything they might encounter, and allows them to either electrify or we also list our phone number in case the resident just wants to call us and do things on the phone. We certainly have a number of residents who aren't super comfortable with filling out the survey on the computer, which is totally fine. But the benefit of having that in GIS is it can all be downloaded into Excel, or it can be used as a dashboard on the GIS platform itself, and you can click on individual houses and it'll bring up their information. Or it will visually show, here's our collection of lead here, here's our copper collection elsewhere, very helpful tool. And then that can also be incorporated into a number of surveys for the utility to use themselves, so staff can use that as a more detailed survey when they decide to follow up to some of those lead homes and go in and identify some of the nuances that these staff are more familiar with. And that'll all go back into each parcel's database. So here's just a recap of some of the immediate considerations for utilities. Like I said, no partial lead service site replacement, which Gary and his team are well aware of. Begin inventorying as soon as possible, which we have already started to do a little bit. And developing a policy in the UP for any funding, any costs that might need to be shared.
So we had to guess before we'd done our full analysis out of 7,000 or so homes and properties, how many lead service lines do we think we have in a tighter band than less than 1,200?
Honestly, I was just racking my brain thinking about this while this was going on. I'm going to say less than 500.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the old homes and islands. Right.
I mean, you have everything up until the 80s, which mm-hmm. would be condos and countryside, but I mean, that's where town ended.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have probably 80% of the town is going to be new.
Do we know from construction drawings in those areas of town and the builders, like, that they were all relatively homogenous in their utility lines, or?
Yeah, like, if we could get into Craig's house in Conover's,
yeah,
we could probably make a very educated guess as Gary Conover built every one of those homes.
Yeah.
That's going to be the same.
Okay. And that's all part of the process, basically, when we're doing our inventory, is coming up with things like that to be able to then map that out. And
when we change water meters now, we check.
Okay.
So we're going in with the neighborhood, so they're all the guys are checking.
Okay. And we think in the past 10 years, we've probably changed out how many of the old meters?
Probably 10 years we haven't done, probably the past two we've been checking for material.
Okay.
Because
we knew this was coming. Okay, so maybe a few dozen out of there.
Oh, no, probably... I would say a few
hundred.
Hundred.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we have not found any lead service lines yet, and those few hundred, so, yeah. So this really becomes an issue when you go to do a water main project. We identify pockets of lead service lines, because then you have to figure out how to do it, who pays for it, notification, and basically you're running, private utilities into somebody's house, and people have problems with that from time to time. Either they don't understand, or they do understand and just hate it. And so other towns, they've made them sign waivers, they've come up with other issues where they've basically said, you're leaving poisonous metal basically in your ground, and your water is running through it, and there's health risks associated with that. But that's a problem that hopefully we won't have until we do our survey and analysis and figure out what's going on.
I know
the neighborhood's a little bit really scary.
Mine's Carver.
Yeah, yours is like across the street, across the highway from you.
So oh, yeah.
That scares me. Yeah, yours is Carver.
Mine's Carver.
No, I really think it's.
I'd be surprised. Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
My parents from 1830, that one's Carver. Right. My uncle's down the street.
Everything on this side of the river, nobody had water main until 63.
Okay.
And then most of them did not go on the city water until their well went bad. Like my mom's house was in the 80s,
yeah,
so that's common.
Yeah,
right.
And the city raised copper to the beef boxes, or to the, to the curb stop.
Yep.
And then and wait for people to look on. So we're lucky.
I know Sycamore got a bunch of money.
Oh, I have an answer.
Yeah.
Like millions of it. But they already identified a big chunk of them.
Yeah.
And the 680,000 they estimated in Illinois, I think, is or more is going to have.
Yeah.
of that many.
Yeah.
Well, they, 40,000
Oh, I'm sure. Well, and then, I don't know, the lead services in Chicago, be what I'd worry about in that, anyways. They're all galvanized pipes. And
Is there a much commercial concern, or predominantly residential?
Predominantly residential. Yeah. The commercial concerns, a lot of them would be cast iron pipes, but in like bigger, bigger stuff. And the one that's up downtown, we've replaced.
Yeah.
So that's done.
Yep, it's an informational item, just so you know a little bit of what we're going to be getting ourselves into over the next few years. So there won't be anything specific for us to vote on or approve probably for another year at the earliest. And that's assuming we find a whole bunch of pipes and then we have to come up with some sort of plan, right?
Maybe just a contract with EEI if they're going to do the mailers and
okay.
That kind of thing.
Okay, understood.
Yeah, so we'll have to get together there.
Great, thanks. Thanks.
Thank you. To new business item number 7, PW 2022-37, Lake Michigan DuPage Water Commission preliminary engineering report.
Yeah, so this is the first step in our Lake Michigan project. So this is high-level engineering. It's for $153,000, which is a lump sum. This will take us through, some of the decisions we have to make as it relates to funding strategies, project planning, etc. So as we talked about during the budget season, there's kind of three components that we have to authorize. Corrosion control, this is another one. The third one escapes me, but this one is in there. It is budgeted. And will take us through the, I think it's an 18-month process, a little bit longer.
Yeah, this, I think it's the first quarter of 23,
okay.
What we're anticipating.
So. Okay, so much less than that. Okay. So, and then the different deliverables and scope is attached to B in there, and it gets us to having some data to be able to make some decisions as it relates to project timing and funding and all those other good things. So.
And I think you're more on track, right? I think it will be like if he delivers in the first quarter of 23, then all the information can be discussed and digested. So it'll take a lot of time. That's a lot of information.
Yep.
Questions?
Go, Gabby?
No.
Great, thank you.
I got it that way, so it's good pull.
Moving on. New business item number 8, PW 2022-38, Bristol Bridge Road Phase 3 RFQ and construction engineering improvements.
Let me take this one, sure. This is a little thing that we've discussed for over a year now. Bristol Bridge Road is part of the, it's a 75-25 split, and in order to do this project and use those funds, we had to do an RFQ and select our phase 3 engineer for this. And after doing this, we did select EEI, and then this is the contract for that phase 3 engineering, the total of about $67,000. This is all part of the steps we have to take, and the letting for this will be next.
It is set through the engineer's letter that was confirmed yesterday. Yes.
Great.
I'll turn that back over to you.
Thank you.
Good. Good. Say it again.
Sure. Sure.
All right. Excellent. Thanks, Eric.
Please.
New business item number 9, PW 2022-39, Bristol Bridge Road AF.
Yeah, same topic. These are just introduction of the resolution, which is required by IDOT, and a joint agreement, which nails down the specific funding
good with it?
I'm good.
Good.
Sure.
It's like Jonathan's good with it. Chris wants to talk about it. That's amazing.
Did you have to say
something?
Yeah. Yeah. New business item number 10, BW 2022-40, Prairie Point parking lot improvements.
All right, we recently took bids on the improvements, and again, what this entailed would be fencing. Also cleans the buildings and the surfacing of the parking lot, restriping. There's quite a bit of concrete work involved, especially in getting the entrance to the building on both sides to make it ADA compliant and what they require quite a bit of concrete work. So several bidders bid the project, and the low bidder is Anthony Payton out of Aurora. In the amount of $365,542.25, roughly $100,000 below our estimate. So certainly we are recommending for Andy's been around for quite some time, and they specialize in this type of thing.
I'm surprised Dean even bid it. That's probably why they're high. Who's the bigger stuff? Works.
Yes. All right. On to new business item 13, PW 2022-43. Much overdue, Red Bart. Mailbox reimbursement policy amendment.
Yep. So I'm not proposing to change the way we process the payouts. If the snow hits the mailbox and we determine it that way, there's still no reimbursement. But if we hit it with the truck, back into it, strike it while we're driving by. We do think it's reasonable for us to process the payouts, which are usually between, you know, 0 and 15 per year, depending on, you know, how bad the year is. So I think this year we had less than 5.
Yep.
So, you know, we have not changed the $75 payout since at least 2006, and it might have even been placed before that. Haven't changed it. So I updated it through inflation to just round it up to $125, and then I put a little clause in there that says we can basically update that according to inflation every year. That way we don't fall behind and do this again 15 years from now. So that's the proposal, although I understand, you know, it's a mailbox policy. People might want to talk about the broader implications of, you know, the policy. We're specifically just looking to update the dollar amount.
We're looking at 125, right?
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
Most cases, it says here, receipts are 150 to 200, so we think that's just due to the current market.
Yeah, it's the few that we hit, you know, the mailbox that somebody picked happened to be within that dollar amount. So, I mean, I would have no objection if you wanted to make it $150 or $200, you know, just as long as we've got the inflationary factor on it after that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, next year it's going to be $100 now, I guess. Price is going to start.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. But, I'll gladly pay him the $25 if it goes down.
Yep.
I'm good with the recommendation of 125, but open to your thoughts, Ken and Joe.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's do that to consent.
Yeah. Sure.
So my mailbox got knocked over, but that ended up just being the one that wasn't any good. So we had 6 claims, but I think you were rejected.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few like that. Especially when you see some people like, they got like mesh holding it together.
Right.
Yeah.
Just waiting for that. The funny part is, funny for you guys, not funny for me, because my mailbox got knocked over, but it literally happened like 2 or 3 days after we talked about it in the public works meeting. Not surprised, to be honest, that it hadn't gotten knocked over before, because it hung a good 4 to 5 inches over the curb from the previous owner. So I'm like, how it lasted almost 11 years with less than that, I'm like, I'll take my shit. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my guys are like, and remember now all these new subdivisions, the mailboxes are now 17, 18 years old, so they have about 18 years old. They don't take much time now.
Well, and some of these new ones now are snappable.
Right.
That dance. He took a picture and it was in his yard, and it's just snapped back in place.
Yep. Yeah,
breakable.
It's not that.
If you don't like residual business, take the snap on. Excellent. Thanks, Mark. New business item number 14, PW 2022-44, Park and Fremont Street stop sign.
Nay. Okay, so we've got a bunch of photos here of different parks around the city that either have 3 or 4-way stops next to them. The specific issue popped up near Hiding Spot Park. The mayor had actually witnessed an accident in the curb because somebody blew a yield sign, and so he wanted us to take a look at that park specifically, and then he broadened that to any other park that had 3 or 4-way stops. So there is different traffic control, either yield signs, some of them have 2-way stops or a 1-way, depending on where the intersection is in the park. We thought we'd look at it holistically and just kind of say, you know, we think it's reasonable probably to have more traffic control around parks, but that is a little bit different than what we've been doing in the past via engineering study. So we wanted to just bring it in front of everybody, let you know that that's what we're looking to do, and see if there was any questions.
So you're going to use the reasoning is because there's a park there, right? Because otherwise,
so the engineering staff were this is fully outside of the normal engineering analysis we do. We did look at it to see if this accident would push some of these intersections over the edge. They didn't necessarily, according to our previous form of analyses. So this is a mayoral request and concept, basically.
So you go see John if you want it. That's how it works. So I think he's going to write it down.
Yeah, he's talked pretty openly even before this process about changing the way stop signs and yield signs are put up. And while we wouldn't necessarily recommend that from an engineering perspective, certainly, a lot of towns, once they become more developed, will move away from that and will start just putting up stop signs and yield signs everywhere. So, there's hardly a subdivision you can drive through in towns east of us, that have, unregulated intersections. Usually it's yield signs or stop signs. So I think we're trending in that direction, but it has been in opposition to how we've historically done it. So
red and white stripe speed bumps.
Sure, yeah.
Speed bumps do not know. Strike that from the record.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about that.
So I didn't know if you guys wanted to have there's the specific request here to have park-related intersections stop signs signalized, but I didn't know if there was a broader discussion we could have subsequent, or if we want to just have that.
That's where it gets kind of weird. I mean, every alderman can probably come up with this.
Of course. So that's, you know, that's the subsequent conversation is like, do we need to move away from how we've been doing it? So, and I don't know that that needs to be decided today, you know, as much as we probably just need to talk about the direct request, but, you know, it opens a little bit of a discussion. So.
Good point.
No, I'm good.
No, I mean, I see it's a reasonable request that we have, you know, the Catalpa and I think Honeysuckle, as well as Honeysuckle and Redbud park there, and it people just routinely don't yield
right
real time, right? So I think it's a consistent issue, and that being a floor area is a
yep.
Bay area too, there's right. An opportunity for potential, you know, decent entry, either if it's like, you know, vehicle to vehicle or a kid happens to
sure.
Get into the park. So I think it makes sense. And to your point, Bart,
people expect it. I mean, yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the Cannonball Trail 47, like, that doesn't ever seem to change. It's a stop sign, it's a brief stop, you go by it, you don't wait for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But, excellent.
Yeah. All right, we'll prepare the materials then for a future meeting, and then if we want to have another discussion on the stop sign issues, we can, but otherwise we'll let that sit for now.
Yeah.
We'll hear a whole lot of immediate desire to do so.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you. New business item number 15, PW 2022-45, supplemental MMT resolution for bulk rock salt.
This is it. Ken did it right on the issue. This is our year. We have to do this. This is the way that I track our MMT. It's been through that. So this is their way of making sure that we're spending our funds correctly. This appropriates 120% of our 1,800 tons. So this we won't have to come back and do supplemental unless the bids come in incredibly high. And I've been fairly conservative at $95 a ton, which is a $30 a ton increase over last year, which I hope doesn't happen, but the way things are right now, you just never know, especially with fuel prices the way they are. The companies by contract have delivered to our site, so they're going to build in that price for fuel.
No. So we're going to do the same thing with the county too, like we did before in the past.
No, Kendall County has not bid our salt for us for probably a decade. They stopped.
Yeah, but don't
we
use their facility to store some of it, right?
1,000 tons out there right now.
Yeah.
So that's our bet.
Okay.
That's our emergency fund in case.
That's what I thought. I just want to make sure that's
good. If they don't deliver salt, we get in a bad situation, storm after storm, we have 1,000 tons ready to go. Right?
Okay.
Which is about half a year.
So that one on consent.
Yeah.
You guys agree? Awesome. New business item number 16, PW 2022-46, leak detection survey proposal.
Yes, thank you. We have just got another contract with a company called MESIS and did 50 miles of the detection survey for us. In different areas of town, we included older areas of town where we thought the leaks would be higher, but we didn't include Greenbrier, Sunflower, Prairie Gardens, and to our surprise, they found some of the worst leaks. Two of the worst leaks, one was in Greenbrier and one was in Prairie Gardens. So, as part of our tightening up of our water system for Lake Michigan water, we'd like to complete the rest of this year and go after these leaks to see if we can get under that 10% threshold that's required for Lake Michigan. If we can get under that 10% threshold, we don't have to submit a yearly plan for non-revenue water loss to the IAR, which is, you know, makes us do more aggressive water main replacement and actually ends up costing us more money in the future. So, you know, in essence, we're going to spend a little more now to save a lot later.
Yeah.
And this was slated for 2 years of budgeting. I'm just asking to take the second year and move it into the first year, which we had already budgeted. The reason this is here also, this is a situations, and but they were lower than a different another company.
Okay.
We're very happy with the results. They found that they gave it pinpointed up as when they were really bad. They actually called us while they were there and said we need to go fix this.
I think it's something that's important, especially to get into that 10%.
Yeah, where were we at?
12.5. 12.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. So the standard public works agenda?
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
Contract to come to your house, and let's say they dump a bunch of hydraulic fluid on the street, they have to clean it up. Well, Eric's been very good about making most contractors clean it up, but unfortunately he has no teeth in order to make them do that. Most municipalities do, so I'm guessing that's why it works most of the time, because they assume we do, but I would like to give him something that, you know, he can go after if we have to clean up our streets from gravel, hydraulic fluid. You know, they run a track over it, destroy it, or whatever.
Okay. We're finding more and more that contractors are putting brick pallets, spoils from people's yard, putting it out on the street because the residents are like, well, don't put it in my driveway.
Yeah.
Put it in the street.
Yeah. Right. So, and since they're ruining our streets.
Okay.
Have we already looked at that with Kathy to try to pinpoint something?
Yeah, okay. I wanted to give a little more direction. Joe and I talked about this. Okay. It was last week.
Yeah. Get a reminder tonight.
Vision? Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, I talked to Christy a little bit about it to see if there was something we may have had on the books.
Yep.
And she was not aware of anything.
So okay. Yeah, and we'll round that out to make sure that there isn't something already that other towns are using that we didn't see, and then we'll create something if not. So.
Okay. We've got the nuisance in general littering in the snow in the street, but I don't think we have anything.
Yeah. Try to do that for next month's committee meeting.
So kind of on that too then, how does it work? Like, let's say somebody got mulch or something like that and they dump it on the street and they're using a shovel to pick it up. Is that kind of
that's exactly
what we're talking about.
Well, that was hydraulic fluid. I'm talking about actually.
But yeah, we don't have anything for that either.
So they could scratch up. It could be a brand new road, and they dump it on the brand new road, and then they come in there with the back loader, and scratch it.
Or leave a big pile of it.
I just passed it today. They're doing it today. It was like,
yeah, every time I see them, I ask them to get it off the street. Every time any of our guys see it, they're like, please get that off the street.
And most contractors will, because they actually think you can find them for it, because most of the times you can.
But yeah, then we need to do it. Cause right. And I was wondering how that played out, because I know it's a little different than yours, but.
I believe the resident is washing it off himself. I'm sure I could get photos if you needed it.
Yeah, I think the resident's trying.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's just right. Staying out in the asphalt, and with that pavement being so old and so long,
mm-hmm.
So it's just going to suck.
Yeah. It happens a lot. Now I'm thinking about it, it happens a lot more than we think.
And what really made me start thinking about was on a green trip where we build the roads, we accepted the streets, and now they're building houses. So they're putting those supplies right on
the streets. No, I the more it makes sense to do something.
Yeah,
the only other thing
I got one every 6 years
that I mentioned before. Is there anything that we can do about the timing on the light on Cannonball 42nd? We talk on someone's ear and say it's just.
Yep, I will. I will continue to. And we have. He goes up there and adjusts it, and he goes up there and adjusts it, and we'll get as close as we can.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
You don't like sitting for 3.5 minutes?
You know, I hear about it more than I have to sit there, so I would rather not have to respond to the complaints.
No, I'm not being sure.
I was
like, why don't you just stop at the Olive Gallery and give a little balsamic?
From the gambling place there.
Yeah. All right, that's all we have. Anybody else have anything else to add? All right, let's go ahead and close the meeting at 6:58.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, we made out for a statement last month.
You got to do it.
Hey, Mark.